Belgium game ended 3 years ago. We need you to save the ball now. Jeff Tamron, clean it up, or let's get someone who will. Clint Dempsey,
yeah,
you're a national team legend. Now we need you to be a national team leader. Michael Bradley, the U.S. does not need you to be Zen. The U.S. needs you to play better. Josie Altidore, is this really as good as it gets?
Welcome to the Soft Tattooed Millionaires Podcast. I'm your host, Max, joined by my brother, Jack. And today we are also joined by Adam Bells, the author of the Scuffed newsletter, and most recently a desperate Hail Mary pass of a letter to Jonathan Gonzalez, begging with him not to switch allegiances and play for L Tree. Adam, how you doing?
I'm not great, man. I'm not great.
That is true. So I think what would make sense for this emergency podcast where we talk about Jonathan Gonzalez is just kind of make this our grieving period, and we can talk through the pain of today. So, to start with, why don't you guys tell me where you heard about the news and what were you thinking when you first saw it?
I got an alert on my phone. I was sitting working on some stuff for my day job, and I immediately texted you, Max. And I think it was just sort of a mixture of pain and the familiar in that, of course, this is happening, and that I didn't want to be used to this kind of disappointment. But this has been a year where this emotion is nothing new to me anymore.
Yeah, I feel a lot the same. I think I saw a Taylor Twellman tweet about it. He tweeted the Univision piece, and I sort of thought this might happen. I was feeling pretty uneasy last week, and I was feeling uneasy since the Mike Waitala piece came out, and Gonzalez didn't. Like, he totally dodged the question about where his chances were going to be. But I still held out hope. But this morning, that was it.
Yeah, I got a I have this foolish thing where I, like, one time synced my phone to my work computer, and now I get text message alerts on my work computer. So I was, like, in a meeting this morning, and then I got Jack's text about this, and I was probably just cursing audibly in this meeting. But God damn. It's just like you guys, same sort of thing. So let's rate this pain. Like, you know, when you go to the doctor's office and you've, like, broken your ankle and they're like, how much is this pain?
How hurt, often are honestly? You breaking your ankle? Good God.
Well, actually kind of a number of times, but yeah, when they're like, okay, rate this on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is unbearable. How bad do you think this news is? How much pain is it causing you on a scale of 1 to 10?
I think it could be like when I fractured my wrist, and I knew it hurt a lot at first, but it wasn't until a couple hours later when I was in real pain and I went to the doctor and I found that I had fractured my wrist. So I think the pain depends on just what kind of player Jonathan Gonzalez develops into. That right now I feel, on a scale of 1 to 10, I feel about a 6, but my fear is at a 9, because if he develops into what the kind of player he looks like he has the potential to be, then my pain is closer to like an 8 or a 9.
Let me ask you guys a question. Where do you rate the Trinidad disaster, the Trinidad disaster on a scale of 1 to 10 pain wise? 10?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I
woke up in the middle of the night thinking about the game. Like, I couldn't sleep. And when I finally slept, I kept waking up like in my dreams, like having new thoughts about it. Like, oh, why wasn't anyone complaining to the refs when Pulisic was, like, slide tackled? I would just, like, wake up thinking about that. Mm-hmm. And so that was just a disaster. So that's a 10 for me.
Yeah, it's a 10 in soccer terms. I mean, there is real life, and but definitely a 10 in soccer terms.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, then for me, it's an 8.75. I won't quite say a 9, but, you know, pretty close.
I can imagine part of the pain for you, Adam, too, is that through your newsletter, you spent so much time kind of getting invested with these players to, like, an absurd Rain Man style, I would say. We both subscribe to your newsletter, and the fact that you know, cut all these clips, watch every touch of all these players, you must have a sort of kind of insane amount of familiarity with their game. And so I imagine it must be really strong and heightened for you in that way.
Yeah, and particularly so with Jonah Gonzalez, because I felt like I was sort of an early adopter, you know. I wasn't like the first person to hear of him, but I didn't have a lot of company when I was hyping him in like mid to late September. And I was like, damn, this is like, this guy is really good. And he's obviously not getting call ups, not getting a ton of attention. Yeah. I think that made it worse. I also just like, he seems like a good dude, you know? And so, I mean, he tweets prayers.
Yeah. It's all his Twitter feed is.
Yeah. He just seems like totally salt of the earth. His background picture on Twitter is like straight up Leave It to Beaver, you know?
Yeah.
I just love it. I don't know him, obviously, but what I do know is very appealing to me, you know?
He and his family do seem incredibly forthright. I remember seeing like an interview with his dad, I think it was, and they asked him the kind of the dual national question. And his dad was like, you know, Jonathan's an American. He loves America. We'll support him wherever he chooses to play. And every communication that comes out of that family and from them seems very like thought out and very direct in that forthright kind of way. Even his announcement to play for El Tri today on Twitter, that like one sentence that he tweeted out in Spanish was something like, you know, I'd be honored if you would call me. Hmm. You know, it was very, very humble, very, yeah, just centered down to earth.
Yeah, I noticed the exact same thing. Like not taking anything for granted, at least in his statements.
Yeah. I watched a lot of sort of Mexican Sports Center type shows today, and everyone seemed very cautiously optimistic in the Mexican media. I mean, they call him the Jewel, so it seems like they understand just what a prize they have like on their hands.
Do they really call it the Jewel? I didn't know that.
Yeah, or they just subscribe to the Scuff newsletter, and so they've been following all the time. So
yeah. I'll have to start referring to myself as Rain Man. I like that a lot.
Looking at the American media coverage of it, obviously not on the front page of ESPN, but a lot of coverage in ESPN Deportes under their Liga MX section. And so it is weird. It in this kind of realm that it lives in, where it's he is notable in America, in the mainstream American media, insofar as he is related to Liga MX, the most publicized part of it, aside from our sort of like niche soccer world, it seems to still be tied to his allegiance to Monterrey and to the like Mexican American community in the United States. It's crazy, just the discrepancy that we continue to see between the sort of like between mainstream soccer coverage and then this giant Liga MX media that is still kind of like second fiddle to a lot of sports media in America.
Yeah, did you guys see some of the stuff that Hurt Gomez said today on Twitter?
Yeah, I was reading that too.
What do you make of that? Like the general. I mean, Gomez has been, I think, making this point in various ways for a while, but the general idea that the media, fans, and federation don't, you know, know and value players in Liga MX, or maybe even Latino players in general.
I think Gomez is spot on with that a lot of the time. This time, I think it's actually slightly off because Gonzalez had been, you know, part of the U.S. Soccer Federation and representing America, like U16, U18, U20, whatever. Like he was continually involved in that, and it seemed that they if he was taken for granted, it was in the last year and not in his development, but he was identified early. He was, you know, involved in all those camps. But generally speaking, Gomez's points about that, I think, are spot on. And Gomez's own career, he's talked about how he wasn't scouted at all. And that he sort of had to fight his way out, wasn't offered any scholarship, wasn't part of that soccer promotion pyramid, in a sense, growing up as an amateur player in the States. And so, I mean, I think in general, he's totally right. With Gonzalez in particular, I think, though, it's maybe slightly more complicated than that, because he did have such like a continuing relationship with United States soccer. It seemed until recently when he just wasn't getting a call up, and maybe the relationship soured there in addition to the U.S. not making the World Cup.
Yeah, I kind of wonder how much of this is down to the general turmoil that the USSF is in right now. I mean, there's a lame duck president. They don't have a manager. like, could this be someone just slipping through the cracks? I don't really think so. I do believe that the U.S. does a bad job scouting Mexican-American talent. We talked about this last week on our show, but I live in Texas, and most of the teams that win the sort of like Texas State Championship are from the Brownsville area or on the border. And it's interesting to see what happens to those players on those teams in comparison to some of the Dallas-Fort Worth teams. None of those kids from the border towns in Texas get signed to colleges. They'll go to junior colleges, but a lot of the Dallas people sort of end up at these like bigger name schools, or they end up signing amateur contracts. So I mean, at least from where I'm sitting in Texas, I see it on a day-to-day basis of kids just getting ignored, and primarily Mexican-American kids, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's your take on that? How do you feel about Gomez's?
Well, I more or less agree that with you when you say that, you know, he's been part of the system for a long time. That is Gonzalez. And he was identified early. I do think he maybe wasn't valued as much as he should have been by Sarakin, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we still don't really know exactly how all that went down, but the best we understand at this point is that Sarakin didn't call him personally about the Portugal friendly. And I think he, you know, he should have done that. I mean, I'm obviously not the only person saying that. But and the fact that he didn't was, you know, to some degree an indication of how much he valued Gonzalez as a player. You know, if Sarakin thought like we gotta lock this kid in, I mean the situation is screaming out for a one time switch. We gotta lock him in. We gotta show him some love. Mm-hmm. Then he would have made that call, you know, unless he's just straight up incompetent, you know, which is also possible. But.
Yeah. Well, certainly the organization as a whole is incompetent. I wonder like if there were just people not doing their jobs, not reminding Sarakin, or I mean, I know that sounds ridiculous, but
it doesn't sound ridiculous. Yeah, I don't.
Well, I can imagine the tricky part too is that in the situation where Sarakin's in charge, he's in charge in this temporary way, and they're like, okay, we've got a plan. Here's what we're going to do. Your job as temporary head coach isn't to build a roster, isn't to do this stuff. It's just to manage like a limited set of responsibilities because you're stepping into a role that's transitional. It's got all this sort of complicated stuff. We don't expect you to understand the entire system here. Just manage these guys, get them ready to play in the friendly. That's your responsibility. And maybe in part of that sort of like who's in charge of actually building the roster, who's in charge of getting all these players. Maybe I can imagine that I can definitely imagine that for that friendly game too, I would imagine a lot of hands trying to craft that roster because it was the first chance for the U.S. to do anything from a public relations standpoint to say like, hey, we do have a bright future. Here are all these guys. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine that Sarakin alone was responsible for that. I have to think it's higher ups and USSF.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of public relations, though, I the way I thought about it, and I admittedly am kind of Rain Man, but the PR way I thought of it was like, what would be more beautiful I love America. I love the diversity of America. I think it's our strength, you know, what would be more beautiful than like this, a future spine of the national team that has like a Mexican American in it, a Black American, a white kid, you know, and like a couple of
each. Your audio cut out a little bit. I think I understand. So just like the spine of the U.S. men's national team also representing the greater sort of diversity of the country itself. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I would have been so excited.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, if there were a lot of hands involved in, you know, crafting that roster, I feel like picking Jonathan Gonzalez is a no brainer.
Yeah. I mean, looking at the roster for that Portugal game, does not help me feel better about a whole lot.
Yeah. So speaking of PR, I want to talk about the timing of this announcement because it came simultaneously with the announcement of the January rosters. Obviously, in some ways, that's what precipitates it. Even though his announcement isn't an announcement against the U.S., it's an announcement for Mexico. But it seems to be you know, like the fact is that he was called by the U.S. to for these camps, and he did not answer that call in some way or another. I think he sort of didn't respond or something like that. So this announcement comes on the heels of that, and that makes me feel like it's just as a fan, it's like the worst possible timing. Because USSF is like putting out all these things. Oh, here's this young roster we have for these January camps. Every MLS team that's got players in it is putting out their own tweets and their own like little media stuff that's been like prepackaged, ready to go out today. I saw like Real Salt Lake has got like video interviews with like coach and GM talking about their players on the roster, all this kind of stuff that's been like ready to go for this big splash when the January rosters got announced. And but the only thing that any of us are actually talking about is the Gonzalez stuff. Mm-hmm. So it just seems like the worst possible timing for that too.
Yeah, it's so awful. It's like salt in the wound all day long. Yeah, I love Danilo Acosta. I think he's a promising left back, but I saw a tweet from him late this afternoon about how he's happy to represent the national team, and I'm like, oh man, I don't want to hear that right now.
Yeah,
it just seemed to drive home to like the divorce between MLS and other leagues, both because as I was saying, the announcement itself was so well choreographed, it just reinforces how connected USSF and MLS are. Everything is like, and they're like, okay, and it's noon, send out your announcements. And everyone's like flooding things simultaneously. But also, I mean, naturally the January camp can only really have domestic players, but like everyone on the roster is domestically based except for Bill Hamid. It just seems like it just reinforces again that this weird status quo issue with USSF.
Mm-hmm. It almost felt like they're trying to bury the news of Jonathan Gonzalez at one point.
They were doing a lot of work to try to bury it, but not working out. To maybe try to talk about this in a So before we get to like how we're going to get over this, let's kind of like look this demon square in the face. Adam, why don't you tell us like what you loved so much about watching Gonzalez play, and hopefully this is sort of like helps us get over it. Bye. I don't know if that's true though, but yeah. So tell us like how you kind of fell in love with watching him play.
Yeah, I got to do this too. So this will be a helpful exercise. I think I've tweeted about this, but I think he's already an elite defender. He's extremely intelligent. It seems like he's never out of position. He works so hard on defense. You know, he's running all the time, checking his shoulder, running, like tracking people down. And what's really striking to me is he just has like a knack for flying into a tackle and coming out with the ball, or just being in a scramble. You know, bodies fly everywhere, and then he has the ball. I think that we don't have people say, well, we have a lot of good central midfield talent in the pipeline, which is true, we do, but I don't think we have anybody like that in the pipeline. I mean, you could argue maybe Tyler Adams. But I don't think so. I think I think Adams is like potentially, I mean, he's not there yet, but potentially like a foundational number six for the U.S. Nationals, or was potentially that. And to kind of add insult to injury, he showed in the first match of the Clausura that he's getting better on the ball. I mean, if he has a weakness, that's what I'd say it is. He's not. He sometimes looks a little rattled in tight situations with the ball at his feet, and you know, doesn't maybe make a lot of productive passes. He wasn't ambitious at all on the ball in the fall, even though he made the Liga MX's best 11. He wasn't like, he's not like Iniesta, you know. He's not like playing a lot of piercing balls forward. But I saw a marked change in the match on Saturday. Even though it ended in a 1-1 draw, he looked like he was more confident, and he was trying to connect passes, and he was succeeding, advancing possession forward. So that's what I think he brings. I'm curious, what do you guys think? Surely you've watched some of his games.
Yeah, I think. Before I answer that question, I wanted to just kind of give some perspective to you. I mean, he's only been getting regular minutes for Monterrey since like when? July.
Right.
So it's like, if you just putting that in, I mean, it's in 6 months, he's gone from establishing himself as a starter to playing in a championship game in Liga MX to now having a spot on a World Cup roster, you know, knock on wood for him. And that is crazy. So when I think about young players, one of the things I think about is like, can they handle themselves at an age when they're like, when they're the youngest person on the field? Mm-hmm. I know this from like a baseball scouting perspective. What you look for are, who are the guys who can tread water when they're like 18, 19, 20 years old, when everyone else is like 24. And so for me, watching Gonzalez, that's what stands out to me, is that like, he is so young and he's handled like everything. And the fact that the pure fact that he can just handle everything at such a young age means that, like you're saying, Adam, that when he takes that next step, it's just like, oh yeah, he can also just, he'll develop this other skill. He's already got that baseline where he's not going to screw up. He's going to be able to handle everything, but now he'll start to be more aggressive with his passing. Now he'll start to do this kind of stuff. It just, it looks to me like, you know, like the kind of cookie cutter of what you want a young athletic prospect to be like.
Yeah, I think what stands out to me is like officiating in Liga MX is different than MLS in general. I think Liga MX, when there's sort of a tussle for a ball, the referee will let that play out. And it's exactly like you said, Adam. Like, Jonathan Gonzalez only weighs 130 pounds. Like, he is like, he's a small athlete for Liga MX, which is like sort of like a smaller league. And I have fear when I see him run on the field. Like, he looks so delicate, and yet he somehow manages to be sort of like to impose himself on a game that other player in a way that other players don't, and to be only 18 years old and to be doing that in one of the fastest leagues is really, really impressive. And it's also just something that we need so desperately for the U.S. men's national team. I don't think that the U.S. men's national team is very gritty. I think we wait for the call, or we expect the call when there is none forthcoming. And I think having someone in the spine of our midfield with a mentality like, no, I'm going to go and I'm going to fight, and like, I'm coming away with that ball, like, I'm not expecting a whistle, would have been so huge for us.
Yeah, I would say that if the, like, paradoxically, the U.S. men's national team, like, we have soft midfielders and gritty forwards. it's like the opposite. Like, no one's scrappier than like Deuce or someone like that. But
yeah,
it's like,
Gritty is a great word. Gritty is a great word for him, because I remember I first watched him and I thought, oh man, he is so small. Mm-hmm. I thought, man, he's too small to play, play the number six. But you watch a few games and you realize it doesn't. He manages, and yeah, he manages, like you said, impose himself. He just, opposing teams don't play through the middle much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe we should go full breakup and talk about the letter.
Yeah, Adam, do you want to walk us through your idea on Twitter to write an open letter to Jonathan Gonzalez, asking him one more time to reconsider his decision?
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about something like this for a while, but it just seemed a little crazy, because even, you know, 2 days ago, I would have probably said it's a 50-50. It's 50-50 whether he goes with Mexico or the U.S. Mm-hmm. But then I saw that it was, you know, just like we talked about earlier, I saw that it was reported. And then I saw a story saying that the ink wasn't dry yet. He hadn't signed the documents. I thought, you know, what the hell? Like, if there's any sense in his mind that he isn't appreciated by the U.S., it can't hurt for me to just write something and put it on Twitter that tells him, no, like, we do. There are a lot of us who do appreciate what you've been doing. We know your work. We think you're, you know, you could be a linchpin of our national team, and throw it up and see what happens. I mean, obviously it didn't work.
But yeah.
I of course, you know, of course I didn't like expect it to work. But wanted to get it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's worth doing for sure. And, It does seem kind of like that. If anyone that potentially the most organized people in U.S. soccer, maybe the fans,
undoubtedly.
Maybe they're like bored with it or something, and we're just, you know, totally obsessed. And like,
I think with like in 6 years when Grant Wall writes his expose that has talked about all the crazy sex parties that U.S. soccer was having, and how like there was, it was just this wild house of like cocaine, and they're just like keeping this stiff upper lip, or like this facade of like being in control, will be like, okay, that makes so much more sense now.
I can see Don Garber being involved in something like that.
That may be the only explanation for why Don Garber still runs MLS.
Yeah, exactly. The soccer Don.
That's why Bruce Arena is always so chill, because he's just fire behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I wanted to, one more thing about it. I wanted to lay out like why I think, you know, I really think he and Weston McKennie would have worked well together. You know, McKennie is a little bit, I think, naturally a little bit more of a freelancer, maybe not quite as disciplined, but definitely a more exciting, like, passer, forward-thinking player than Gonzalez is. I really thought they would be great together, and I wanted to put that in the letter too.
Yeah, maybe Weston McKennie should write the letter.
Yeah, I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think they are like they ever reached out to him, or
like other players? I don't know. I wonder what the reaction is like in like the young core of U.S. men's national team right now. I wonder what it's like right now in Germany on like the WhatsApp between McKennie and Pulisic.
Right.
Yes, it's interesting too. I wonder how like the different groups of U.S. soccer players, like how and when they know each other. Mm-hmm. If it's like, you know, like the U-20 squad, like those alums who, that's like the McKennie and the Pulisics and the and Jonathan Gonzalez's, those folks like kind of know each other and that sort of thing. Yeah. But like those are different than like the MLS Academy folks who, you know, they don't necessarily know much about Gonzalez. They probably don't know much about him since he's playing in Liga MX.
Yeah,
that's what I'd be guessing.
It's so bizarre to me that like Mexico feels so much farther away psychologically than Germany right now. I also think that there used to be, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, there were a lot more Americans playing in Liga MX. And like right now, I can't think of anyone around Jonathan Gonzalez's age who, or there's a couple of like 16-year-olds, but I can't think of anyone in Liga MX who's American who's starting games that he would be in contact with. Like he's inundated with like players for L3. Obviously.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering. I mean, I was hopeful weeks ago that that Gonzalez's success may send more American players to ML or to Liga MX, because mm-hmm. it seems like, yeah, getting a spot in the Bundesliga is great, but maybe there's this other place for other talented Americans to go that's actually really close to America.
Yeah.
And has a higher quality league than MLS. But now I wonder if this is going to kind of like set back relations, so to speak, between American soccer prospects and the MX.
Mm-hmm. You know, but that raises the point that Gonzalez was a real outlier. I mean, I know there are other teenagers playing in the MX, but like on his team, I think the next youngest regular starter was like 26 or something.
Wow.
It might be as little as 24, but it's not like 22.
That's incredible.
I mean, he was just very unusual. I guess Cesar Montes, the center back, is like 20. So I'm wrong there, but it's an old team. There's a lot of like veterans. Those Colombian attackers are all like in their late 20s, and so I don't know if it's not like Liga MX is like a place that's going to develop tons and tons of American talent by giving teenagers playing time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm probably one of the few people who is kind of sad to see Will Trapp, or not Will Trapp, who am I thinking of? Paul Arriola leave Liga MX and go to DC United. But that's another story altogether. I mean,
just sad about it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 22. He was playing at a higher level. DC United doesn't really have their shit together right now.
So what is y'all's plan for getting over this news? Do you have like a next step, or are you still just in the grieving phase?
I think I'm probably doing exactly what I did after we failed to qualify for the World Cup, and I'm like, I have like 7 Wikipedia tabs open, you know, or I'm like on Transfer Market, just like hitting the like American flag icon and looking at every single player who comes up, just seeing like, okay, who don't I know yet, you know, like what diamond am I missing, or like how am I gonna deal with this, or maybe even telling myself that, you know, maybe he's not gonna make it on the Mexican national team, you know, he's only come onto the scene, you know, 7 months ago. Maybe I'm crazy, but. Yeah, definitely denial.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's worthwhile to just, I mean, what I'm doing right now in my own head and like in my various social media platforms is just arguing that no, this is not okay. It's not like just from a sporting perspective, it's not going to be okay. We don't have people who can fill the same hole on the field as he does potentially, you know, and just like sort of, I just want to like be, it seems like that's an important thing to just sort of be straight about, you know. Keaton Parks is not Jonathan Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. Kellen Acosta is not Jonathan Gonzalez. So that's what I'm doing right now. Probably can't do that for very much longer, but how am I going to get over it? I don't know. Just time will heal the wound. And I'll kind of root for him
in the world. Yeah. I still kind of feel like he's got his hooks in me, and I, you know, Jack and I both are kind of, we maybe are unusual from US soccer fans in the fact that we like Eltree. I feel like they're like in some way their second team.
Yeah.
Like watching their games.
We grew up watching them. It's like, yeah, there's nothing strange about it. I mean, we've been watching them forever, so
it's just weird in the fact that like it's sort of like the natural rival in a sense. CONCACAF, and people just always talk about that, and
yeah,
Desicero and that kind of stuff, but
yeah, frenemies.
Yeah,
well, if they do really well, you know, I mean, it's, everybody knows this, but if they do really well in the World Cup, then it raises the profile of CONCACAF in general. Mm-hmm. Good for the US.
Cool. The last thing I wanted to say before we wrap things up is that at least we're not Canada. Adam, I don't know if you saw the news about the U.S. or excuse me, about the Canadian women's soccer team.
No, did you see this? What is okay, this?
So today, the U.S. or the keep saying U.S. Canadian Soccer Federation, whatever they're called, announced that they hired a new men's coach. And that new men's coach is the coach of their women's team. And what they did, so the women are currently in a World Cup qualifying cycle, and the men obviously have been eliminated. So during the World Cup qualifying cycle, they've hired away the coach from the women's team. And they did not tell any of the women's players this. So on Twitter, the Canadian women's national team players are just like, wait, what? We don't have a coach and we're trying to qualify for the World Cup. So it's a healthy reminder to all of us that international soccer is crazy.
That doesn't make me feel better.
It makes me laugh though, which is nice.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, Max, think of some clever way to wrap this up.
I've got nothing clever, but thanks to everyone for listening. And we hope very much that there won't be any more emergency podcasts and grieving sessions in the near future. We just want like 1 or 2 months in a row of no bad news. That would be amazing.
Oof. We got the elections coming up, man.
Oh, all right. Think happy thoughts. Thanks for joining us, Adam, and have a good week.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, and before we go, we should say, Adam, give the listeners your information, where they can sign up for the SCUF newsletter, and where they can follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, you can do both at the same place. Just follow me on Twitter at ZLEBMADA. It's my name backwards. I have another Twitter account that's like my real job, so that's why I have my name backwards. That's where you can.
All right. Sounds good. All right, have a good week.
Thank you.